Welcome to WebRush, the weekly talk show that brings you stories of real-world development from industry experts and developers like you and me. Each week, Ward Bell, Dan Wallin, Craig Shoemaker, and John Papa find out what it takes to write, deploy, and maintain apps that stand up to the demands of the real world. And now, here are your hosts.
Welcome back to WebRush. And today we're going to be talking about animating the web with Svelte. And I've got my intrepid hosts, Ward Bell and Dan Wallin. Hey, Ward and Dan, how you doing?
Dan, how are you doing? I didn't want to jump over you there.
I didn't want to jump over you because I'm doing so fantastic, Ward. I wanted to hear from you first.
Yeah, I wanted you to go first, Co. I could one-up you. I am doing better than super fantastic.
This is the show of empathy today. So we're going to...
I am fabulous, John. Fabulous.
All right, the Fabulous Dan and Ward Show. That's what we should have renamed our podcast. Instead of WebRush, it could have been the Fabulous Thunderbirds with Dan and Ward.
One of my favorite songs is the Fabulous Thunderbirds.
So guys, we've been talking about Svelte on and off now for a couple of months because let's face it, it is probably the hottest rising web framework out there. Vue and React and Angular are still wickedly hot, but Svelte seems to have come... like in a horse race, right? Come around the bend and Svelte is coming on fast. And there's just so many cool, great things you can do with it. And I just watched recently Rich Harris talk about some of the new stuff that he's planning for the next version of Svelte. And I went on the Discord server for Svelte and I started looking around and I found a bunch of great people out there. And one of them was really into animation. And he is our guest on the show today. I'd like to welcome everybody to the show, Andrew Smith. How's it going, Andrew?
All is going well.
And to give everybody a little bit of information about Andrew, Andrew is Jamaican and he's a Fortnite gamer. A Fortnite gamer. Can't wait to compare notes here. He's also a Slim PHP contributor, expert problem solver, egghead IO instructor, community builder as well. And of course, a Svelte aficionado. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Thank you, John.
Hey, so we were talking before the show about a couple of things, and one of which I found interesting is that you've really gotten into Svelte, not as your first web framework, but you came from other places too. So give us a little bit of information about your background in web development.
Yeah, so I guess we could go all the way back to Backbone JS. When I started looking
No.
Backbone.
Yeah, Backbone felt a bit complicated, and there was another framework called Spline.
Oh, I remember Spline.
Spline? Yeah. Yeah, Spline by Alex Macau, I think his name is. He runs clearbit.io right now. And I was using that instead. And then from there on, moved into AngularJS. I have to say the JS because I realized that there's no Angular and AngularJS. So AngularJS.
No relation.
Not at all. Genetically dissimilar.
It's like Java and JavaScript. You put the something on the end and it's just a completely different language.
Is that like something you find on the SAT? Java is the JavaScript as Angular is to AngularJS.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, was quite happy with AngularJS, doing quite well until the big announcement, 2.0, the complete rewrite, and everyone was like, "What? Where should we go now? Where should we go? Where should we go? Help!" And I kind of stumbled upon Rich Harris's first JavaScript framework called Reactive, which was released at the same time as React.js. And I guess the reason why I chose Reactive over React.js was there was a lot of similarities in Reactive with Angular and also with the handlebar templating system. So I chose Reactive over React at that point. And I kept on. And then when Rich announced that he was working on Svelte, so I think the first version that he made available public, I think it was pre-1.0. I jumped straight in there to start using it. So yeah, that's how I came to Svelte land.
So Andrew, I don't actually remember when Svelte version 1 came out. Do you know kind of what the time frame of that was?
I think that was in 2016, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm trying to think back now. Angular 2 was a couple of years ago as well. Like, we're at Angular, what, 11 now, Dan?
Yeah.
I think. It's every other week. Year. That's 5.5 years of Angular, basically. See, I think 2015, 2016 was the time frame for Angular 2, which is kind of the same time frame then, if I'm matching up right, that Svelte 1 made its appearance. Is that about sound about right, Andrew?
I think it was a bit after Angular 2. So I think Angular 2 was probably before 2015.
Yeah, it may have been. And the reason I'm thinking this out loud is that I think your story of using AngularJS and then not shifting to Angular version 2 is not a unique one. I think there's a lot of people out there we've all spoken to who really love AngularJS, and for specific reasons, which I think then in some ways can attract people to things like Svelte. So what was it that you really liked in AngularJS that kind of, or maybe didn't like in Angular version 2? Kind of what was that reasoning for you loving the first one and then not sticking with the second version?
So I think the AngularJS, coming from Backbone Spine to AngularJS, it felt more like there was a lot of freedom. It felt like what KnockoutJS should have been. That's what it felt like to me. It felt like it had everything just right there. You know, everything was out of the box. And then there was this library, what was it called? UI Router, which I used to use as well, along with AngularJS. And it just felt like a complete package at that point. You know, it just felt like something that was working well. What I didn't like about 2.0, I wouldn't say anything. I just didn't like the announcement that there was no upgrade path. In the early days, it was announced and everyone was like, what's the upgrade path? And I was like, we haven't figured that as yet. And it's like, okay, you probably should have kept the announcement until you figured that out. So, yeah.
That was minor detail.
The infamous RIP announcement that turned out, you know, with
the Grim Reaper.
Yeah, that was
which I think is sad, because I think the way I've always looked at that is the way they announced it at the time probably wasn't the best way you could do so. And there's always a learning experience. These are good people with good intentions.
Yeah.
And Angular 2, now Angular 11, I really like it. It does a lot of great things, but I think there was a period between the announcement of Angular 2 and then when it actually launched, where a lot of people were left wondering, what do I do next? Like, I have to start working on something. And I don't think anybody wants to work on a technology that won't be kept up. So you're on AngularJS, you realize it's not going to be there. Angular 2 is way off in the distance. Whether it's great or not, you have to make choices because you've got to, you know, bills to pay. And you started making the choice to switch to Svelte. What drew you?
That one also, you know, the jump from there. You said that you React didn't float your boat right away. But I always think of Svelte as being an outgrowth of React, a response to React and sort of in the React style. But maybe I'm just completely wrong about that. It's certainly because it doesn't have, I thought it had a render. This tells you what I know. All right. So I'm being an idiot here. I'm just curious that you completely bypassed React and Svelte seems like a different paradigm to me than AngularJS. How wrong am I about that?
So I think if you go through the progression from where I went from Angular, I went to Reactive, which was Rich's framework prior to Svelte. And that had a lot to me in common with Angular. I guess more of the two-way binding and, you know, some of the features that I was already familiar with in Angular, as well as the template and syntax was the whole mustache template syntax. So it kind of just clicked right away. Compared to something like React, where it was like a new paradigm being introduced, it's like, whoa, these are all foreign concepts to my brain.
You know, there's a lot to think about too when you're looking at these different frameworks out there. And I just dropped in a link into the show notes for everybody. If you're looking for the original announcement of Svelte, I found it up on the Svelte blog from November 2016 by Rich Harris. And he introduces a lot of it. And you'll notice a lot of the little things he drops in there about why he created it and the intention that it had at the beginning. And I think a lot of this is still true. So I recommend everybody out there take a listen to all of this. But today, Andrew, we got you on to talk to you about animating Svelte. And you made the comment before the show of how easy it is to animate in Svelte. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on what's animation like in Svelte? Like, where do you want to start?
I guess we could start at the lowest level of animation, which are the transitions in Svelte.
So just for those at home, what when you say a transition, what do you mean? What kind of subcategory of animation is that?
So it's I guess CSS transitions, right? Where you're going from one state to another. So i.e. could be opacity. So we're gradually moving from zero to one. So invisible, well, transparent to visible. So yeah.
Okay, because like I had in my head, you know, like PowerPoint, a transition is when you go from one slide to another, and then you might think of it as like from one page view to another. So that's why I was looking for clarity. So you're talking down at the specific animation of transitioning from one state to another.
Yeah,
got it.
And on that topic, what are some of the key scenarios where you see that coming into play in apps? Because we were joking earlier before we started the show that, you know, we don't want to recreate bad PowerPoint, right? Because PowerPoint's great at animations, but come on, there's some really bad ones out there. So are there specific scenarios before we get into the Svelte side of it where you find these are super useful?
Yeah, I mean, to bring a user's focus to something on the page, for instance, if there was an error message, then you could pop that up or pop it down from the top of the screen. Similarly to if you're buying from a shopping kind of website, you wanted to see when you add something to the bag, maybe you want to see the bag jiggle a bit to say that something was added, you know.
But wait, can't you just do the same thing with a blink tag in HTML, like get their user's attention? Isn't that still okay?
Yeah, you could.
You're so kind.
That was a good response.
You could.
Yeah.
Andrew's like, what is he saying?
Just keep going, Andrew. You were really on a good course there before the blink tag.
Yeah, you okay, John? You all there?
No, I think the blink tag is good. I mean, if you need to draw attention that much, then why not? Chuck it in there.
You know, as we're talking about animations too, I'm looking at the Svelte tutorial, which is the REPL that I think we've talked about 100 times in this podcast, because I think we're all just, we love it. We think it's great. Great way to learn Svelte, by the way. We'll drop a link into the show notes for this. In the REPL, there are a couple sections in their table of contents. One of them is motion, another is transitions, and the third is animations. I find it fascinating why they were split out like this. Could you kind of talk about what each of those might be, Andrew?
So the motions are more of... they're more JavaScript based, so it's giving you, it'll give you a value from a starting point to an ending point, and then you decide how you'll use that value in your animation. Whereas transitions actually will apply a CSS transition to whatever HTML element you've attached it to, right? And I guess one of the main differences as well is that you can decide how you can control a motion from beginning to the end. So you can tell it to start, stop, jump a bit, start again, you know, whereas with a transition, it's fully based on when the component or element get mounted in the DOM. So you always have to wrap it in some sort of a if block or something in order for it to actually work.
The motion then is more... it's more something you can control manually, and you might want to use that. Imagine if you have your own custom animation or something that really doesn't fit with mounting to the DOM in a way. Maybe you just want to track a user's mouse around the screen, for example.
Yeah. Or even, I mean, the example in the tutorial where it's like a progress bar, right? So if you wanted to get data from the let's say you were uploading a document and you were getting... data back from the back end to say the progress is this much, you could then update the progress in the front end using the motion to just show as it's going along.
Okay. And then the transitions, those are ones, if I hear you right, so don't put words in your mouth. It sounds like these are ones where you're adding something to an LI tag, like adding list items into HTML or removing them from HTML, or maybe you're hiding or showing, like entering and leaving certain elements from the DOM or the page.
Yeah.
Is that what the transitions are more like traditionally?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, what I always described as it needs, they're state driven, right? So you have to have some sort of state driving the transitions. There has some, a state has to change in your document in order for the transition to happen. So it's either the state is now true, so it's now showing that particular element, then the transition will happen where it comes in, or if it's false, then the out transition will happen. Transition also is split into two directives. So you have the transition directive, and you also have a in and out directive. So you can specifically say, on the way in, I want this element to fade, but on the way out, I want it to fly to the left, like I want it to slide out.
And to clarify, you're talking about Svelte specific, the in and out you're talking about there?
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent.
I use the word directive because I'm familiar with the whole Angular directives.
Yeah, yeah.
So you say these things are really, I'll confess that I never found animation. I still haven't found animation to be easy in Angular, modern Angular, at all. I get stuck all the time. And there just seem to be lots of parts that have to be just right, including, and I'll never understand this, some certain frame has to be positioned absolute, another one has to be positioned relative. I get lost in all that stuff. Are you telling me that with Svelte animations, I can make that craziness, or I can tamp it down somehow?
Let's take a break for a quick word from our sponsors.
So, John, one of the things I like about AG Grid, which is a data grid component for the kind of complex grid scenarios that we encounter all the time in enterprise apps, one of the things I really like about it is that it works for a variety of frameworks, Angular, React, Vue, or just vanilla JS. Does that ring a bell for you?
Oh, it really does. There's all these different companies that I work with where they have no choice but to use a lot of these different tools because they have different teams working on them. So being able to port their code or share that code and that technical investment they have is really important to them.
Yeah, well, it's important to us, ideally, we're a consulting company, and you know, we never know what our client's going to want to use, Angular, React, or Vue, but they're all going to need a grid, and it's great to be able to reach for the one grid that works everywhere, AG Grid.
You know what, and any size company, too, because you could have these teams that maybe they only use one framework, but eventually they're going to switch to another one and be able to take that investment again and use it, reuse it, is really nice.
So if a multi-framework data grid makes sense to you, please go check out AG Grid at ag-grid.com.
And we're back.
Well, and after that lovely word from our sponsor, the question was, I was describing just before the break how challenging it is, how many levers and thing positions and all this craziness that you have to, that I've had to experience when I've tried to do them in Angular. And I was wondering if somehow your animations in Svelte were easier to set up and manage than that, because I get lost in all of the little things I have to get right in Angular world, and maybe I was just wondering if it's easier somehow in Svelte.
So I think transitions in Svelte are easier. I wouldn't say complete animations are a lot easier, but transitions, which are pre-built animations in Svelte, they're a lot more easier to work with. You literally import, let's say, fade from the Svelte transition library, and then you just add transition colon fade onto a item inside of your HTML and wrap that in a if block with some sort of state that will change, and that's it. It will fade in and
you
out.
You have canned animations and transitions you can reach for.
Yeah.
There's a library of them you can just pull out.
Yeah.
See, I don't remember having any of those for Angular either. I don't know what that's changed.
Well, I'm looking real quick here, like, because I was just looking at, you know, you have your typical if type statement for just bringing into the DOM or out. But looks like there's a transition fade, and I'm assuming there's probably some others. Is that accurate?
Yeah, there are others. There is fade, blur, scale, fly. And you can also create your own, because at end of day, it's just a function that returns a CSS string interpolation, right? So you can create your own sort of wacky transitions if you want.
Do I have any rules about something having to be relatively positioned and absolute positioned in the container or any of that stuff? Do I have to do that?
From these, the built-in ones, no. There's no rules as such
for the built-in. I hear you there, though, Ward, because I remember, and I've written animations in a lot of these different web frameworks, and even just pure CSS animations and transitions, where I'm looking at an example someone else wrote, and it looks so easy. And then I copy it in with CSS transitions and animations, and then I realize after hours of this, oh, I need this to be absolute, and that needs to be relative, and that one needs to be in Greenland. And it's like knowing the types of positions in CSS is actually almost as important sometimes. At least it felt like that to me. But I'm no animations expert, and
I don't want to be. I'm going to lay my cards on the table here. I don't want to be. I want like five simple animations. I want to figure out how to get in and out of a page using the router. I want to, I want an if block to come in and go. I want the li, to come and go. Give me like a nice set of five I can just plug and play. I'll leave the fancy stuff to other people. So if you told me that I could just have those, a quick cookbook and get going, it would make an enormous difference to my product.
Yeah.
And I think that it's like that?
Yeah, I think Svelte provides that out of the box. So yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to chime in on that. I just put it in the chat so everybody could see it later, transition events. One thing that I always found challenging with some of the others, jQuery made it pretty easy, but some others I can think of where not only do you want to animate, but you need to know when it starts, when it ends, because that affects text or something.
Yeah.
And I'm going through one of the demos they have here, which just changes the text as the demo starts and ends. Mm-hmm. And it's like amazingly simple. I mean, you have a little arrow function for each thing and you say transition fly. It's like done. So that's pretty cool.
That is amazing right there. So I didn't realize this until you just pointed to that. And I want to call this out because like there's been many times where I run an animation and then at the end of the animation, I want something to happen.
Exactly.
And it's not always easy to do that. And a little shameless self-promotion, 10 years ago, I wrote a library called Toaster.js using jQuery. And oddly, literally like once a week, I go out to some website and I can see it's still being used somewhere. I was ordering food off of Carabas.com, some, chain Italian food for the kids. And I saw, oh, look, there's Toaster. But one of the things I keep getting asked is, why don't you update from jQuery? And one of the reasons I haven't is because jQuery made it so easy with their animations to say, after this animation, run this code.
Yep.
And it looks like, from Dan, what you're saying on this one part here, the transition events will let me define before the animation starts, after it's done starting, and then when it's about to end, and then right after it ends.
And in line, that's what's so impressive. It's literally on intro start, on outro start, and then you just give an inline function, or obviously you could call an actual separate function. But that part alone, I'm going, wow, that's like amazingly simple. It gets back to what you were saying, Ward, and I'm with you. I've always struggled with like Angular animations to the point I've just brought in other libraries to do a lot of the stuff I've done. And with this, I'm going, I could do this. Maybe not
is
as
that
good
easy,
as,
Andrew. Or are we just smoking what they're offering here? Is it really like this?
No, it's really like that. It's that easy. I mean, it's quite nice that Dan found the transition events, because not a lot of people know about the transition events, and they're quite powerful. Because like you could have another transition start when this one ends based on a transition event. So you can create quite complicated looking animations with just simple primitives.
What you're saying is that Svelte animations are so easy, even Ward can do it.
Yes.
Let's not go that far.
That was low, John. And
we're obviously being funny here, but at least I'm trying to be. But what I'm really getting at here is that there's people like Ward, and there's a lot of people like this who don't necessarily always see the value in some of these animations and transitions and the work that they do because the kind of apps that they're building. But maybe, and Ward, correct me if I'm wrong, if this was easier to do, you might even use them more often.
I'm desperate to use them. I can't tell you, though, how many times, you know, I'll put an animation, an if animation, simple one, you know, and it will work on when I put it on one component and it stops working when I put it on another, or if it's buried in some component. So these are the kinds of things that happen to me all the time. You know, I had it was working in that little component, but because that component is nested in another component, suddenly the animation stopped and disappeared. And I can't predict when the animation is going to continue to work and when it isn't. Do you find that that happens to you in Svelte, or that for some reason their animations always work the way you intended?
Yeah.
All right. That's extreme, right? but because nothing, I mean, those are the two polar opposites. But I'm telling you, my apps is unnecessarily clumsy because it lacks animations. And the only reason it lacks animations is because I run out of time to make them work. And I'm trying to get a sense from you whether you keep banging your head into these things or whether that just doesn't happen very often.
It doesn't happen very often. I actually challenge myself a lot now when I see people post like animation of stuff they've done in, let's say, just pure CSS or another animation library like GreenSock. I challenge myself to just build that out in Svelte and see how easy or how quickly I can get it done. And it's normally quite easy. Like the primitives are there to get stuff done.
For those out there who aren't familiar, by the way, GreenSock is something I think we talked about a few times in the show, but just to remind folks, can you kind of give everybody a 30-second overview of what GreenSock is, Andrew?
So GreenSock is an animation library which does quite advanced animations, especially if you're working with SVGs. You can get a lot of great animation utilities. So I will say that Svelte can't compete on that level when it comes to the SVG stuff. But for more simpler stuff, I think Svelte can. So yeah.
Yeah, I've used that brings back memories there, Andrew. I used GreenSock years ago. I don't remember why now, but because didn't it start out with a Flash type thing, I believe?
Yeah.
And then they migrated it to JavaScript.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's super powerful. It's way beyond my skill level because I'm with you, Ward. I like could just be happy if when you delete something, it fades out. And then I'm like, okay, cool. I made it fade out. But, you know, like Andrew, you'd probably be like, no, we're not going to make it fade out. We're going to make it slide out and fade and then collapse. And from what I'm seeing in Svelte, that's actually pretty doable with a really minimal amount of code.
Yeah.
Nice.
You know, one of the most impressive animations I saw, and this is kind of timely, although this will air a month later, is during the U.S. elections recently, the New York Times had this great election chart of the map, which showed different areas based upon like what states you were looking at or who, what votes you wanted to see. And all this, as I understand, was written by Rich Harris and friends at New York Times using Svelte animations. I'm kind of curious, do you know of any other really cool animation examples that are out there? And I'll try to find a link to that one as you're thinking about that.
There was one from Svelte Society Today recently. Can't remember the actual developer's name, but yeah, there's quite a few. Also, there's a website called Svelte Recipes, Svelte.recipes, if I remember correctly. And there's some cool animations on there that were developed by Amelia Wattenberger.
Is this the Svelte.recipes webpage?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll pop that link into the show notes as well. Oh, these are pretty interesting. I like the, I always like the scatterplot type charts.
Yeah.
And they've got a cool one in there that you can actually use to take a look at. That's pretty fascinating. It almost looks like some of the demos we've seen using D3, I believe. Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It looks like D3, but not D3, I guess.
Yes. Very nice. Well, she's using some of the D3 components in here. You can see the D3 array, the interpolation and the scale.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Speaking of that, does that mean that there are easy ways to link, you know, to go grab something that somebody had cooked up in D3 and plug it in and just sort of, you know, link and log this stuff together? Or
yeah,
people still use link and log?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you can use, I would say, any of the animation libraries with Svelte if you wanted to. So if you're more familiar with something else and you thought maybe you want to just import that in and use some of the features while using some of Svelte's features, you could.
How I have a what may seem like a left field question, but all right, so I built this thing. Now I want to do some end-to-end testing. Can I disable all the animations with a throw of a switch so that the end-to-end doesn't take 6 hours to complete while it waits for all the animations to finish? This is something that I do routinely in Angular. I can throw a switch and disable all of it, and all the animations go away, and I can it cuts the end-to-end test time way down.
Right. I'm not sure. I haven't looked into that, so I couldn't say for sure.
Yeah, we'll have to dig more on that one. That is a good point, though, Ward, because like I use Cypress quite a bit, and yeah, disabling the animations really speeds it up, obviously, because you know sometimes when you're fading it in, you have to wait for it before you can actually check that DOM element.
Yeah,
and yeah,
John, I remember John and I cut we were doing that. What was it was a Tour of Heroes demo of some sort, and we wrote the end-to-end test for it, and it cut it to 10% of the length of the time it would otherwise have run.
Yeah, because when you're constantly testing the same thing over and over and over again, which is what you do with tests, it's got to go through the same motions. The little animations that are, you know, you always have to get the timing just down right. But when you add in 100 tests, those fractions of a second start adding up.
Yeah.
And they really pile on.
So for those of us that are not animation experts, which is probably all of us on this podcast, if I were to take a line of business app, you know, not necessarily one that the public sees, but something my company's using, are there any particular scenarios where you go, you know, an animation would actually make that app go from just not so cool to cool, but also, you know, you mentioned like the shopping cart jiggle.
Yeah.
And I can think of some others with, you know, everybody works with like data grids and line of business apps, but are there any scenarios you've seen where you think animations would add just that slight flair that, you know, takes it up a notch at all?
So that's something I think about quite a lot when I'm about to write the animation for something I'm working on. I always think, does it actually need this bit of animation? Is it gonna improve what I've done, or is it just gonna get in the way? And it's always a difficult one to think about. But yeah, I think it would be the same example that comes to mind as the whole shopping cart or error messages fading in and out or sliding in. I don't think I'd add too much animation. I think there's a limit to the amount you should add when it's a business kind of application. I think if it's a web public facing app where you want to showcase, you know, the transition between routes, then yeah, you can do a lot more. I think Sarah Drasner, she had a website she created where she each route you click to, the elements would actually move on the page to a new position each time you move around. And I thought that was quite good. And it showed off the animation, which is what she wanted to do. That was for Vue.js, but it still showed the animation of what she wanted to do.
I'd like to take Dan's thing and sort of pump it up more. I don't think it's a nice to have in many respects. There are certain things that happen in a business app that are critical that the user will miss unless you shake the screen a certain way. Like there's lots of places where you check a box and something disappears. It's easy, you know, you check the box or something appears and you're supposed to do something. It's so easy not to see that when you're filling in the form. And that animation catches the eye because we're all tuned to watch for motion. We're looking for that lion to jump out of the bushes at us. And I know I am. You know, I'm terrified of those lions. Yeah. And that becomes a critical part of the UI because otherwise you can almost measure the error rate, the user error rate, before and after certain animations. And it no longer is just, ooh, that's pretty. Yeah. It's functional. So I wanted to, you know, Dan was being nice, but I really think that this is what drives me mad about my inability to get animations right, because I only write forms over data business apps. I'm not trying to be gratuitous. I'm not trying to have it spin on a cube.
Why not?
Why not? You know, you click that form and it rotates, and now, I want to see the data. Now, I don't want to spin it, but I do want to say, hey, user, you got to watch out for this thing over here that you just did.
Yeah.
Well, let me give you two sides of a coin here in a scenario that I saw recently. There's an app, and I've seen this app many kinds of times, where you're looking at a screen, and it's got a shopping cart, for example. And the shopping cart's in the upper right-hand corner, if you can visualize this, folks. Upper right-hand corner of your screen, tiny little icon of a shopping cart. And whenever somebody adds something to the shopping cart, it updates a badge in the shopping cart with a 1, 2, 3, however many items are in it. I think we've all seen these kind of apps. Now, the problem with these sites that I see, and there's two sides of this, is one, it could either be an animation issue or it could be just a design issue. If you shouldn't put the shopping cart far away from the user's eyes. If you're in a large screen, which we're all getting larger screens these days, and you're shopping, and you full screen your browser, and you're in the bottom left, adding items to your stuff, and then you add something to cart, and way off, you know, 27 inches away, if you've got a big screen, right, in the upper right-hand corner, the shopping cart updates. But how do you know that? So is that a design issue, or is it an animation issue, or is animation just duct tape in that situation to, you know, maybe blink or show that the item is there? Kind of walk us through like how we should be thinking about this stuff, Andrew. What would you do?
So in that scenario, I worked in a product a few months back, and we had a similar setup to that where we had a shopping cart. It was jiggling, but as you said, it was far at the top of the screen. So what we did was design iterations decided that we should just change the actual add to cart button to show that an item was added. So the actual button itself changed to the number 1 with a plus and a minus, right? So you could see that happen right before your eyes. So you'd have to be looking to the top right to see if the cart jumped or not. You just know that you hit that plus, you hit that add to bag. The add to bag now animates into a 1 with a plus and a minus. And from there on, you know, okay, here we go.
Great point, Andrew. The place to do the animation is where I interacted with the screen, not 3 miles away.
Right.
Don't make me get whiplash looking on the screen. And I got to admit, there's been many times I'm on a shopping cart and I end up in the cart later and I'm like, why do I have 4 of that item? Like, it's because I didn't realize that I clicked add and it actually took, you know, place. So that's not an animation issue sometimes. That's more of just a design in my mind, right?
Yeah, I think.
But animations can help you. Let's say you can't change that. That's where an animation can help you if you have to look in another area of your screen, right?
I've seen a number of clothing websites where when you click the add to bag, you actually see the item become a small version and scroll across to the top of the screen to the cart. So it's like guiding your eye to, hey, look, we've taken it, we've put it in the bag.
which makes you want to click it again, right? You're like, oh, that's cool. Right. I'm going to buy another shirt.
It should sprout legs. The button should leap up off the thing and start crawling up to the...
Now, that's one word I have not seen. That's a winner.
A canned animation
in spider animation.
The animation is a person that throws your shirt in a bag. The animated bag then carries up into the other screen. Is that a new animation that's built into Svelte Kit? You know? I like that, you know?
It's not... How should I put it? It's a bit more complicated. There's no click and it just happens, but you can use the Svelte Animate, which has the flip. Flip is first, last, invert, play. That's what it stands for. And you can use that to create such animation. There's also the, what's it called? There's one called cross something, but it allows you to exchange item between two lists. So if the lists have the same identifiers of the item, you can actually exchange items between them. So yeah, it requires a bit more work. It's not straight out the box of just, let me just add this and it works.
Can you animate sound in there too? Like I could hear it go, you know, could I hear it go into the shopping cart? Is that, I was just wondering, is it possible to animate sound, you know, trigger a sound animation yet? Maybe I'm just crazy.
Well, I mean, we have the events, right? We have the transition event, so we could set up
trigger
to be triggered at some point.
Okay,
Ward, based on speaker volume, that could be interesting.
But no, that's interesting. You know, I can take a trans. You know, I can listen to an animation that I've got. I can hook into the event and trigger something else, some other behavior.
Yeah,
like a sound.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing that's got me wondering is, because we were just talking about the giant screen. Mm-hmm. So how do I tune my animation for different form factors? Like it's one, you know, I have my app. I want it to work on a be responsive. I want it to work on a phone. A lot of people are using my app on a phone, but now it's going to be on the big screen. How easy it is in Svelte to sort of say, this is an animation I like for the big format. This is an animation I would prefer. Maybe it's just a dampen down animation on a small screen. Can you do that kind of thing?
You could. It's not easy to do. I wouldn't say it's an easy factor because you then have to check the screen size in your JavaScript, and you can dynamically change the transition type.
Can I put it in media tags? Or yeah, because I noticed in the sample code that people will see when they go to this podcast that this looked like stuff that you were actually embedding in the HTML. So I was just sort of wondering if there's a media tag way to because it looked like the animations were controlled by annotations in the HTML itself. That part is yes. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in theory, I should be able to do something by putting a class on here that changed with immediate. I don't know. You see where I'm going though. You see
yeah. Yeah. I get where you're going. I think because the animations are purely from the annotations in the HTML, you'd have to dynamically change that annotation itself. So it's not as easy as changing a media. I think if you're using pure CSS animations, then you could do it in a media tag.
Let's take a quick break from a word from our sponsors.
Are you building a web application? Need to deliver it soon and don't have the people to do it? Maybe you're not sure your company has the skill set or experience to do it. And maybe we can help. I'm your host, Ward Bell, and my day job is building applications for companies like yours. I don't do it alone. I'm president of IdeaBlade, a consultancy that specializes in enterprise web application development. We're particularly strong in Angular, RxJS, NGRX Redux on the front end, and .NET and Microsoft technologies on the server. We're a small, tight-knit group of people handpicked by me for their expertise, experience, integrity, and team spirit. Maybe we can help you with architectural guidance and hands-on development. And if there's something we don't know, and in our field, really, there's too much to know, we can draw on our personal connections in the Microsoft RD, MVP, and Google GDE networks, as well as our international circle of really great developers, people we know and trust personally. If you got a project that's keeping you up at night, shoot us an email at info@ideablade.com. That's info@ideablade.com. And now back to the show.
And we're back. And Andrew, one of the cool things in the animations is it stands out to me that when you're dealing with these motions, they look, I'm going to say the word, odd to me, because they've got the dollar sign before them, which is similar to a syntax used elsewhere in Svelte. Can you kind of explain what that dollar sign represents? And is it similar to Svelte stores? If so, what are Svelte stores? What's the relation here?
Yeah, so the motions, they're built on top of Svelte Store. I guess going back to what Svelte Store are, they're reactive objects which allow you to, you can subscribe to them and you can set and retrieve values from them. So that's what
we can use those in places like where we'd use like Redux or Vuex or NGRX in other web frameworks. Does the store kind of serve that same purpose for data?
Yeah, I think so. But I think it's a more low level than something that like Redux. I think Redux have a pattern that you have to follow. You have to have your reducer and your actions and so forth. Whereas a store, it's a simple primitive. You directly work with it. You don't require to have any sort of action being triggered before a mutation happen and so forth. I would say you could probably build out a Redux sort of thing from the store. If you wanted to.
But do you want to, really?
No. I think it's simple enough to not want to do that. I think the simplicity and the power that it gives you just makes it fine as it is.
Okay, so these Svelte stores are basically ways that you can have some kind of data points, and then you can subscribe to the changes and update them and modify them. How does that relate to animations and motions?
Yeah, so the motions themselves. So if you look at tweens, for instance, it.
I have a couple tweens in my house. wait, you're not talking about kids. Okay, sorry.
No. So the tweened animate motion, it's a bit confusing when I mention animation in Svelte because it's split between like two different things. There's the Svelte motion and Svelte transition. It's like, okay, they're all animations, but I guess the tweened from Svelte motion, it gives you a starting point so you can set a value from, I guess, zero to one, between zero and one. And then once you use the dollar sign before whatever variable you've assigned the tween to, it'll become a subscription to that tween, right? So it's the same as how you'd subscribe to a store.
But give us an example of how you would use that.
Yeah, you can use it for a progress bar. I guess one of the other things that you could do is if you wanted to have some custom CSS animations without using transitions. So if you wanted, for instance, if you wanted a let's say a div to scale in from left to right, then scale up top to bottom, you could use a tween to do that because you have more flexibility. Recently, what I've been doing is I've been wrapping the actual tweened into another bit of JavaScript to be able to create more powerful animations. So I've wrapped it into my own just JavaScript to keep the state, the previous state, before moving on to the next state, so I can create more complex animations.
By the way, I'm going to drop into the show notes for folks. I'm not going to count them real quick, but it looks like there's more than a dozen easing functions that you can use with these animations in the API section of the docs. Things like you might expect, like there's easing in and easing out, bounce, elastic, Ward's favorite things like bounce, all over the screen, right? But it's kind of nice because you don't have to figure out these mathematical equations. You can just import these easing functions and use those with the motion. So that's really cool, actually.
Do they have earthquake, John?
I do not see earthquake. Oh, so there's opportunity for a pull request right there.
what would that look like?
Imagine. I'm thinking I'll have to visualize. Imagine you got a text box and they're supposed to fill it in. Yeah, there you go. Ward's doing it right now. And it rotates to the right and then back to center and then back to the left, but in an earthquake type motion. And that's, you know, that I'm joking. That probably would be a very annoying. Can you imagine, like, you forgot to fill out all these text boxes and your whole screen like starts
shaking?
That's
what we want. You fill in the form, Dan. I got it now. You fill in all the form and you hit cancel and all of the text boxes jiggle down to the bottom, fall like leaves to the bottom of the screen and all the data disappear. And the new form boxes appear, you know, just to make it really clear.
Well, you know,
it might be useful for like required fields, you know, where someone missed the field, hit submit, and all of a sudden they see the, ooh, it's shaking. Oh, okay, I missed that one.
That's it. That's it. Yeah.
I always thought like Disney could have like, if it's good when you fill it out and you lose focus, they could have like Mickey Mouse run across like, yippee. And then if it's not good, Donald Duck's head like explodes, and then the text box explodes. I got
you
big
got
ideas,
big
here,
ideas,
folks.
Dan.
Big ideas.
Because kids would love to see Donald Duck's head explode.
Exactly. It's cool.
No,
I think you're working in the wrong industry. I think Michael Bay needs you right now.
Yeah, there you go. That's what we call it. It's the Michael Bay animation. I love it. Perfect.
And on that note, I think it's time to wrap up our talk today. Andrew, thank you so much for coming on the show today. We like to leave our listeners with a final thought. And this could be on topic or it could be just something interesting that's happened to you recently, a movie you've watched or a book you've read or this blue thing outside called the sky that maybe some of us have seen lately or haven't seen. So on that note, Ward, what is your final thought for our listeners?
Because I'm still processing all of these animations that we've been talking about.
Mickey 3 off, Ward?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
This century or last century? See, I got that one.
Oh, you did. I really, you know, the thing I really want to talk about is the is ordering the world's best barbecued brisket online, having delivered to your home for a mere $250. And I'll put the link to a video that describes it. But I watched this video and I was drooling. There's something about barbecued brisket that just brings, you know, particularly in these troubled times, that I think everybody needs to know about. So I'm going to put that link in. That's my pick.
Okay. Dan, what's your final thought for our listeners?
No. We can't move on from that. I am starved. I haven't eaten yet today. So I'm like, ooh, only $250. What a bargain. two things. I've been watching Clone Wars with my boys because they've seen it multiple times, I think. I'm only on season 3. It's awesome. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it. That's first. That's on Disney Plus now, I guess. But I don't know. Is there anywhere else that you know of, John?
No, it's Disney Plus as far as I know. But I have to add something. Sorry, Dan. If you're going to watch it, there's actually a published recommended chronological order to watch them in.
My son told me about that. I haven't seen it, though.
Yeah. I shall post that in the show notes. It's something my son and I, we always watch it in this specific order.
Oh, there's some seriously cool storylines they go through. But anyway, my other one is more developer-oriented real quick. I'm working a lot with Teams right now, getting apps running inside of Microsoft Teams. And if you haven't ever been to ngrok.io, a lot of you probably have, but if you've never heard of it, it's ngrok.io. It's a great way when you need to have a local running server exposed so that, for instance, you can pull up your phone and hit it. Or in my case, I can hit it from a Teams app. It's really, really cool. There's other options out there, but I've used ngrok over the years and they have a free plan, unless you want your own like domain that doesn't change and then you got to pay some money. But really cool tool.
Awesome. Andrew, what's your final thought for our listeners today?
I guess try Svelte if you haven't. Come with a clear mind. Don't try and compare it to what you're used to because it's a paradigm shift. You know, don't think it's gonna have everything that React has, or everything that Angular has, or everything that Ember has, or Vue. Just come with a clear mind of trying it out and see if it's in your workflow, or see if there might be ideas there as well that you can take and use in your current framework that you're using. So yeah, give Svelte a try.
You know, I'll tack on to that for my final thoughts for everybody out there. I wrote an app a while back called Shop at Home, and the link is up here in the show notes called shopathome.dev. And this app is actually written in Svelte. There's another version of React, another version in Vue, and another version in Angular. And the intent of this is not to say one's better than the other. It was just to show different ways to solve the same problem. So if you're interested in that, click on the link in the show notes, shopathome.dev. You can check out the GitHub repo. I try to keep it up to date as little things change in the different frameworks, although, you know, it's, you know, open source and done on my free time. So I'm not immediate at these things. But I find it useful for myself to see, you know, okay, this is how I'd solve this in Vue. How would I solve the same thing in Svelte, for example? And I find the frameworks aren't as different as you think after a while. Like while the syntax might be different and the approaches, the mindset that I have once I've gone through one of these, it really, I think if you know one of these, you'll be amazed at how quickly you can learn some of the other ones out there. So I'm a fan of web frameworks, as you all know. Andrew, thank you for coming on today. We really appreciate you dropping all this knowledge on animating Ward Bell's life.
Expect big things out of you now, Ward.
Hey, I'm jazzed, man. I know I was hard on my experience with the Angular framework, and I have tremendous respect for the people who, and particularly Matthias, who worked on that. But there was... for just the everyday guy, it's been very hard. And so to hear from you, Andrew, that it's possible to not suffer, that's really, that's encouraging. Thank you.
Yes, and thank you all for coming on and joining us today. And for all you listeners out there, thanks for listening to another episode of the WebRush podcast. And of course, Thank you, all of our sponsors out there, AG Grid and Narwhal, for continuing to sponsor our podcast. And they are the ones who bring us to you every week. We'll see you each week, every Thursday morning.
Like it or not.
See you next time.
We're coming to your home. We're coming.